from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
In life, some days are good and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work, both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
If you want the real story behind the NFL, you need the Stinkin' Truth Podcast. 3-time Super Bowl champ Mark Schlereth breaks down the biggest plays, the biggest games, and the untold stories that make this game what it is. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Ground ball, pass to diving Altuve into right field, being waved around Kyle Schwarber. Here comes the throw, not in time. Phillies walk it off. Bryce Harper wins the game for Philadelphia 3-2 with a walk-off single just past the diving attempt of Jose Altuve.
Some tough losses on this road trip for the Astros. Add this one to the list.
I will, Blummer. I'm adding it to the list. That's
it's a Google Doc, Blum.
Wait, we keep it. That's right.
Listen, Boomer. It's all Google Docs these days.
Shared doc of all the heartbreak from this road trip. Yes.
Sean and I have our we have them power ranked, the heartbreaks from this road trip on a Google Doc.
Yep. If I were to power rank them, I would say the Grand Slam on Friday night was a bad one. Last night kind of sucked, man. Not going to lie. That was
Bryce Harper playing such a huge role in all of it. I mean, because Bryce Harper had a great defensive play, too, in the top of the 10th, where he snagged Alex Bregman hit. And, like, it could have been a disastrous collision, an ugly collision, if he hadn't first done base. It just right. But he ran back across first base just before Bregman got there.
Yeah, yeah. The Phillies have a lot of guys in their team that look homeless.
They do. Yeah, that pitcher, the pitcher who was out there for the 10th, he looked like a combination of Dave Mustaine and Nick Wright. It was there was a little bit of a mega
Nick
feel to it.
You look like half a homeless person. Sorry about that. Hey, man.
No, Nick before he got all coiffed up for television, looked, he had kind of a... Yeah, Nick was just, he had that, Nick could have looked like an aging hard rocker.
He could have.
You know, if he had grown his hair long before and just not gotten all the three-piece suits and everything.
I think the way that they lost that walk-off last night, like when you lose, like losing on a home run really sucks on a walk-off, but when it's a hit and the ghost runner is rounding third, like I'd rather it be two things other than what it was last night. I'd rather have it be like a legitimately close play at the plate, or it's one that it's just not even going to be close to the outfielder, just lets it roll to the wall. The one that the outfielder is scooping and actually making a go of it, like a good sporting try at it, where you just know, like, crap, this guy's going to score. I don't know, man. It's just that feeling of the guy rounding third. We're like, I know this guy's going to score, and
Schwarber's,
this throw's not even going to be close.
And they did. You know, again, we were talking about Chaz earlier, and like, what the hell happened to Chaz McCormick? Their center fielder, Rojas, made a brilliant play to Rob Yiner.
Yes.
Credit to the Phillies, they made some great clutch plays in an extra innings game.
Yeah. They aren't playing the Red Sox anymore, man. But it's been, it's been like playoff baseball during this road trip. The two losses to the Orioles, really all, other than the 6-0 game that where Arrigetti won on Thursday night, it's all felt like playoff baseball, and so did last night. Obviously, in the playoffs, there wouldn't be a ghost runner on second, but here was Joe Espada after the loss last night.
Yeah, I thought we played well. You know, we were in the game there, we're one hit away from winning that game, but... that's what happens. You play these type of teams, and everything is close. Every play matters. Every pitch matters. Every at bat, matters. So turn the page. Got another one tomorrow.
It's funny, we could go back and find a spot of audio, Seth, from April in early May when this team stunk, and those were the answers he was giving after those losses. And yet, I know I was so mad. I'm like, come on, man, you're losing all these games. Get a little angry. It was just a hit here and a hit there, but now it's like, well, they got a 3.5 game lead. You get Joe, you get immunity. That's fine. You can give us the hit here, hit there, because he's right. You know, he is right. Like, these are games that have been played down to the way. It's just funny. Like, however the team's doing, like, when they lose a game like that, like, fine. Acceptable answer. You know what?
You know what it is, though, too? I think the Astros in their losses against these against good teams, I haven't felt like the Astros have wilted in the moment or in the big moment. I think they've made their share of brilliant plays and what have you. So I'm a little bit, I don't know, maybe I'm a little too philosophical about the Astros right now, but just because of where they are in the standings, the close games don't hurt as much, because I feel like somehow, some way, They started Caratini for his first time in his career at first base. He's played there before this year, but that was his first start. The Astros have played 9 guys at first base this year.
Yeah.
They've got a smattering at any given time. There's usually at least 2 minor leaguers that you're only minimally aware of their existence before this year. They're out there playing for this team that's leading the division. And somehow they figure out a way to get it done. Honestly, my biggest issue right now, and the weirdest thing, is that Jeremy Pena is not a good fielder. Like,
and he's hitting the cover off the ball lately.
Like, right. I don't know. I mean, on the season, he's a negative. He's a minus run value fielder.
Yeah.
And it didn't hurt them in the first inning last night, but he botched what could have been a double play. It's strange. That part of it's just really weird.
Yep.
If you think about it, bats go dry, right? Yeah. What do you always say? Like, hey, you know what? Even Bregman, when he goes through his incredibly long slumps at times, at least he's giving you so much value in the field, and that's more consistent.
Yeah.
Basketball, it's the same way. You can always play defense. For whatever reason, Jeremy Pena can't play defense this
year. Yeah, it's wild, man. Yeah.
While still making some incredible plays at times. It's not like he's lost the capacity to make the really good plays, just so many more errors and missed opportunities.
I'm excited for tonight. Little Verlander and Nola action tonight. I don't know how long JV is going to go in this game, but that's a two names on the marquee thing. Like, that's a butts in seats kind of game. You know, like, I would pay to go see this game kind
of
thing.
You know, and I, like, honestly, all of the previous harassment of Kate Verlander aside, it's a fun environment up there. It's a fun environment.
Yeah. That's where she got chippy with some fans in the World
Series.
She did,
but you know what? It turned out when she flipped off that fan, I think it was at the fan's request, because that was after Verlander had playfully flipped off a Phillies fan, and somebody was yelling at Verlander at the buses, and he flipped the person off, but like Philadelphians being Philadelphians, they looked at it as like a love
courage.
Gesture.
Yeah.
So it turned out that was actually a playful moment.
Yeah.
But still. Yeah.
Text message. This goes back to a texter saying that, hey, the Texans are veering into territory where they're becoming one of the most hated teams in the NFL, to which I think we both feel like good. You know, it means hate means relevance. And good point by a texter here. Team hate is a good thing. See Astros. 2 World Series, 7 straight ALCSs. Now, I think part of the hatred for the Astros is that they are perceived to have been the sole team to have cheated to get there.
No, perceived to have been, Sean. They don't. Everybody's come around on that.
Have they?
Okay. Now they're plucky. They're plucky and scrappy. They'll do what it takes.
They are actually now plucky and scrappy.
Yeah, that's the funny thing. That's the shame
sad
of
part.
It.
Yeah.
They are plucky. They always have been. And obviously, for anybody that's new to the show or something, we're not those people that we know that the being better than everybody else scandal.
Sham.
I'm like, okay, honestly, quick synopsis. Really, honestly, the only reason that any of that was ever released to the public, like, or that people talked to reporters about it, was because there was a perception in baseball that, look, okay, a lot of people were doing stuff in 2017, but then they cracked down on it. But because the Astros were still so good offensively, people thought, or assumed, well, they must still be doing it. They couldn't possibly be this good. So that's the injustice of it all, but regardless.
Yeah.
And Kate Upton, by the way, I don't know why I said Kate Verlander. I couldn't, because I was about to say Kate Hudson, yeah. And I had to reverse track so I could give myself a bell at the end of this segment, so I just said Kate Verlander.
She may be on their marriage license, Kate Verlander, you know what I mean?
Like, I thought that I had seen that she had changed her name, but she's still, no, her Instagram is still Kate Upton,
yeah,
and everything. Obviously, like, it's a stage name now. She'd kind of made a name for herself before she met Justin.
People knew who she was, yeah, yeah. People still texting in about the Texans roster here. Okay. This is a funny text. Let's play D'Amico one more time. Ben asked about the spot on the roster. Did you see enough from Mechie and Damian Pierce to put them on this team?
We still have a lot of things to work through when it comes to the roster. You know, when you talk about those guys specifically, Mechie and Damian, I think both guys, they've done really well in practice settings and also in the game. So both guys I've seen, I know what those guys are about. I know who they are as people. And so, but we'll see, you guys will see those decisions here over the next couple of days.
Someone texts in, is there a different Damian on the team that we're not aware of?
I think that it's funny when, you know, there are teams out there that really like the potential of Damian Pierce. They love everything he's made of. They think back to him running without a helmet in college. Like, all those things about Damian, that the reasons we still love Damian. I hate that I have to talk about him like this sometimes. And then I get in arguments, and I'm speaking with a tone of voice that I don't want to use when I'm talking about Damian. Because I think I love that kid and everything he is as a worker and his energy and everything else like that. But when other teams are talking to the Texans about Damian, and like, are they, and they're going to say, look, we've seen these seven plays, these seven carries of his, and I know the blocking hasn't been good, but this doesn't look like the same guy. Are the Texans then saying, well, can I interest you in some practice footage?
Yeah.
Where, but only select ones where he's not falling down after getting thudded.
Right, right.
Ones where he's running really well and he's crisp and he's decisive.
Yeah.
There's still something there.
Look at him plant the
foot. How about the practice footage in non-full contact football?
Yeah, look at him plant the foot right there. You got to want this.
Yeah, sure. A guy whose calling card is physicality maybe shouldn't be judged based on how he does in non-tackle football. But still, here we go.
Text message. This is an interesting one. Guys, I keep hearing about offensive linemen missing assignments and not getting to the second level, but I still don't know the name of the O-line coach. It really sounds like a coaching problem. His name is Chris Strasser.
Yeah.
And at what point does this fall at his feet?
Okay, now, for one, not until the regular season, that's for sure. Two, I'm holding a little bit in reserve on the offensive line for a couple reasons. One is that I do think that Scruggs and Kenyon Green and Blake Fisher did some really good things at times in the run game this preseason. There are also the first couple times they faced teams that run a 3-4. That's something they hadn't seen before in camp, and I do think that there's times where Bobby Slowick, I think you want to see guys adjust to non-ideal situations, because there were some situations in the run game where I, like Clint Cerner and I, were talking about this. We were sending out some of the run plays to like various offensive line gurus that we know, and trying to break down exactly like, okay, why are they blocking it this way, or is this a mental error? And there's some things they were doing that are a little bit funky that I wouldn't put on the offensive line coach, but they're really, really, really hard to do. So it doesn't make me feel any better in the moment, but there's a good possibility that it was almost like non-ideal by design, and they wanted to see what the guys could handle. So that doesn't, I'm not trying to tell you to make you feel better about it. It's just that these are the things that happen in the preseason that don't tell the whole story. So I'm not going to start lambasting Chris Strasser unless we get through halfway, you know, a few games into the regular season, and the running game is a real issue.
Yeah.
And they never did have all five starting offensive linemen out there in the preseason. Or they only did for a limited amount. Laramie didn't play.
Yeah,
so they never had all five starting offensive linemen.
That's right. Laramie never played in a game. That's right.
Yeah.
Do you have to take into account that Akers was going up against second and third stringers while Pierce was going up against starters. I'm just looking at the way in which Cam Akers ran, you know, just with the physicality and the wiggle that he had, you know.
Right, right. And like with Damian, the standard is higher because remember, a good running back, over the course of seven carries, that's still very, very limited. But Damian Pierce, if he's running the way Damian Pierce runs, at the very least, if the blocking isn't perfect, he's still knocking somebody back. He's still breaking a tackle. Just once could you break a tackle. Mm-hmm. He averaged 1.1 yards per carry on seven runs, and I don't think ever once looked like the old Damian Pierce.
No.
Whether the blocking is good or bad. And on a couple of those plays, the blocking wasn't perfect, but other backs would have gotten something out of it. Other backs would have gotten positive yardage out of it. So, no, Now, is it the fact that those other guys were going against backup defenses? Right. I hold it in reserve a little bit. I don't think that it's 100% slam dunk that any of those guys can do it versus starters. But that's why I also look at it a little bit of a wasted opportunity that none of those guys ever ran behind the starters on offense.
Right.
It was always Damian Pierce. When the starting offense was in the game, it was always Damian Pierce. I worry that maybe D'Amico and Caserio do just genuinely feel that Damian's okay. And I would just be really surprised if that's how they felt.
All right, a couple things here. We're going to be giving away four tickets to the Cougs opener against UNLV in the 9 o'clock hour. So be listening for that in the 9 o'clock hour. Up next, one of my favorite articles of the year, the Mike Sando of The Athletic, his QB tiers, T-I-E-R-S, where he pulls together votes from executives, coaches, scouts, ranks the quarterbacks. These are fun to read now because we've got a quarterback that's highly ranked. What tier did C.J. Stroud land in? Who's ahead of him in the NFL tapestry of quarterbacks? We'll tell you coming up next.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
Hey, football fans, you want the real deal? The raw, unfiltered truth about everything going down in the NFL? Join Mark Schlereth, 3-time Super Bowl champ, on the Stinkin' Truth podcast. He's breaking it all down for you. No punches pulled. From the game-changing moments that won or lost a game to the player evaluations, this is analysis you won't hear anywhere else. Mark's got you covered. So strap in and get ready for the ride, because this isn't your average football podcast. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Play the audio again just because it's so good. It's so good. Seth, you want to set this up? You sent this to Ben. I want to play the EJ Speed and Zaire Franklin again.
Oh, yeah.
Because we're about to talk about CJ here and these QB tiers that Sando's putting out.
So this was before the true social media grudge match became a thing between the linebackers for the Colts, EJ Speed and Zaire Franklin, and CJ Stroud. A lot of barbs back and forth this offseason. But a week or so after the Colts lost to the Texans in the final regular season game, they sat down on the Trenches podcast, Zaire Franklin's podcast, and EJ Speed and who you hear first, and then Zaire Franklin talked about just how tough it is playing against a young quarterback like CJ Stroud.
He won't even be looking at the read, and then you know he got about one more look before it get ugly for him. And then he look at your guy, and you didn't plaster like, got your ass. And then this motherfucker look somewhere else and throw the ball for a completion. You like, nah.
That's what I like about CJ the
That's
most.
That's your third read? You know how degrading that is for a quarterback to hit his third read?
He don't do rookie shit. Like, he play Like, he already lying to you with his eyes. He already lying to you with his drop. He already lying to you with his shoulder movements and little shit like that. That's some shit that you ain't supposed to really have till like year 6, 7, buddy.
Yeah. Buddy. Yeah. And that's why, honestly, like, I went this offseason, I sought out negative opinions about CJ, trying to, you know, just be realistic and take off my Homer glasses and figure it out. And I couldn't find any, especially amongst, like, former defensive backs, former quarterbacks, guys that break down film, Kurt Warner, like all these guys. And they were just in awe of how advanced CJ was mentally. And the thing that CJ's been working on this camp, this is where I realized, okay, CJ was already a nightmare for linebackers and defensive backs in coverage because of all those things that EJ just talked about. But CJ and Bobby Slowick talked about how this year he's really been focusing on his pocket movement.
Mm-hmm.
Just the little minute movements, instead of scrambling, just taking one step to the left or stepping up in the pocket or stepping back in the pocket to create some space while keeping a good platform and throwing an accurate pass. We saw evidence that he's elevated in that regard.
Yeah.
So some of the little nuanced stuff. The throw to Cade Stover in the Steelers game, the read was to CJ's right. And as Juice Scruggs was getting rushed back into CJ's lap, CJ just shuffled with his feet nice and wide, turned back to the left, and found Cade Stover and nailed it, like, simultaneously. And then in the Giants game, when there was some clutter at his feet, he just backed up in the pocket a little bit, eyes downfield the whole time.
In the end zone, by the way.
In the end zone. It wasn't even a pocket. Yeah, it was towards the... He could have Orlovsky'd it. Yeah. Orlovsky would have run out of bounds there. Yeah. Like, you're right in the same spot. So it was really good. It made me this is where he's going to be a nightmare for defensive linemen, Sean. Because it's fun, man. When you get to sack a C.J. Stroud or one of the big names, an Aaron Rodgers or somebody, that's a nice skin on the wall. And I think there's just going to be more guys this year that think that they were close to a sack of C.J. Stroud. But he's gonna he's gonna move right out of the way. I'm gonna read you a quick clip from Bob McGinn, who writes for Go Long TD.
Oh, okay. He does a lot of anonymous scout stuff.
Yeah, but he also, you know, he covered the Packers forever, so he wrote a really long form piece about Brett Favre.
Hmm.
But this made its way into the piece about Brett Favre, and this is something we talk about: nightmares, things that are etched into your memory. This is why defensive linemen are going to be added to the mix. Brett Favre was one of the all-time best at those little micro movements in the podcast, or in the pocket, and then getting rid of the football quickly. This is a story from a time the Packers played the Texans in Houston.
Okay.
A month later in Houston, defensive tackle Seth Payne wheeled past guard Marco Rivero off the snap and had Favre dead to rights for what should have been a sack. Somehow, Favre eluded Payne and hit his tight end for 16. As Payne walked away, Favre sheepishly gave him 5 for the great effort and patted him on the backside.
Oh.
Mortified, Payne acknowledged the gesture by softly touching Favre's hand.
Now it's getting weird.
Tender moment. That's not how it happened, Bob McGinn. I was there. Who's my source? Seth Payne. I was walking past next to Favre, and I basically said, you mother blah, 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 what the hell?
I heard.
Can you at least get throw an incompletion, Favre? I initiated.
That's what I heard.
He I didn't softly touch his hand. I kind of like backhanded a high five, you know. We were laughing about it. And yeah, it was my chance to sack Brett Favre. There are a lot of people, a lot of young Seth Paynes out there,
yeah,
athletically challenged defensive linemen,
yeah,
that only get so many sacks in their career, that are going to have a shot at C.J. Stroud, but he's going to be the fish that got away because of his pocket movement.
Right. They're going to just miss sacking C.J. Stroud, and their response to that is going to be to go hit on him afterwards, like you did with Brett Favre. Yeah.
Apparently try to have a tender moment.
Gently grabbing his hand.
So, like, why didn't you put some tears in my eyes or something?
No
there,
kidding.
McGinn?
Yeah.
Mortified? How do you know I was mortified?
Yeah.
What the hell?
That's, dude. Yeah.
Mortified? I wasn't mortified. I was standing in amazement, but I wasn't mortified.
It's journalism. Who's the most famous guy you sacked?
Peyton Manning.
You got a sack on old Peyton Manning. Well, Peyton Manning.
But I got all kinds of stories. Listen. You don't pick up chicks with stories about the time you almost sacked Brett Favre. I was actually a really, really good pass rusher, except for the whole part about the last two steps of getting to the quarterback. I won a lot of one-on-one pass rush reps, but just couldn't get there. I'd be like, I can see him. He'd be right there. He'd be right there. I want to get to him.
You were before your time. You would have been great in the advanced stats win rate percentage era.
Right, yeah, exactly. If I could have just gotten close enough, yeah.
Hell, Clowney keeps getting paid for win rate all the time, man. It's crazy.
I seen him. He was right there.
Right there.
And then he ran. He just done picked up and ran off.
Oh, my God. That's beautiful. All right, so Mike Sando does this quarterback tiers article every year. T-I-E-R-S. Quarterback tiers. The panel consists this year of 7 GMs, 8 head coaches, 12 coordinators, 12 executives, 8 assistant coaches, and 3 involved in analytics. And a partridge in a pear tree. So there's roughly, 50. There's 50 people voting on this thing. And what they do is they take 30, no rookies in this thing, 30 veteran quarterbacks, and they put them all into tiers, 1 through 5, and then he kind of adds it all up and comes up with cumulative tiers for all of this. There's only 3 tier 1 quarterbacks. And Texan fans will not be happy about this. CJ's not one of them. But I...
Oh, you dodged!
Excuse me. I can't get angry. It's Patrick Mahomes, it's Joe Burrow, and it's Josh Allen.
Yeah.
That passes the smell test, I would say. Now, tier 2. Lamar Jackson, 4th overall. Matthew Stafford and Justin Herbert tied for 5th overall. Aaron Rodgers, 7th overall. He was tier 1 last year. C.J. Stroud, in his first year in these rankings, Seth, 8th.
Mm-hmm.
And here are some of the quotes. So this is pretty good, man. CJ's in the, he's in the upper quartile. That's what we can say. He's in the bottom quartile of the upper quartile. All right? The anonymous quotes. An offensive assistant said, quote, "This guy is a freaking baller. When we watch the style of play, there's a lot of Joe Burrow when Joe is healthy. This dude has balls." End quote. That's an offensive assistant. Head coach said of Stroud, quote, "I think he's special. He can make plays on rhythm. He can read coverage. He can go through progressions. He can manipulate coverages. He can create off schedule a lot better." End quote. Which I think is kind of what you're talking about at the end, the part where he's just the maneuverability and the ability for him to navigate clutter and make good things happen. He's elite at that.
I think the one part in here was interesting. It said voters gave credit to the Texans' offensive system under coordinator Bobby Slowick. Some called Houston's personnel underrated. They generally did not hold those things against Stroud. One voter said, "I knew it right away. I was watching him play at Baltimore in his first game ever. In his first 15 plays, I was like, okay, they got a quarterback. I saw him flicking his wrist, moving in the pocket. You could just see that." And that jibes with... Bucky Brooks, from NFL Network, who he does the color commentary, I think, for the radio broadcast for the Jaguars. And that was when they played the Jaguars early in the season. What number game was that? Was that the third game?
Third game of the year. At Jacksonville, yep.
CJ had played 2 games at that point, and Bucky was out on the field talking to the Jaguars coaches before the game, and he said that those Jaguars defensive coaches were saying that to him. We're like, this Bucky, this kid's the real deal. He's just doing some stuff that rookies don't do. And that's where, when you look at tiers like this, I mean, it's hard to... They're basing a lot of this on previous experience and these guys' resumes. All of these quarterbacks that are above CJ, you can't say that CJ has accomplished or done what these guys have done in any given season. They've done more. I think that everybody who voted for CJ high enough to put him where he is, I think very much believe that he can easily ascend to within those ranks.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of doing it for an entire season and hopefully with a good team around him.
Yeah. The only negative quote in here about CJ is from another head coach. Quote, "I'm sure some people gave him a 1, but he's got to prove it. The Baltimore playoff game, the playoff game against Baltimore, when he had to throw, he couldn't do it. He needs to prove he can do it in a big game against really good defenses to become a 1.
Yeah, there were, the thing about that Baltimore game was, You know, I guess you don't want to, it was what it was, and it wasn't CJ's best performance, and you don't want to make excuses for it, but the receiving core was incredibly banged up, and the pressure up the middle was just so brutal. And like, what's Tom Brady's biggest weakness in any era? Okay, pressure up the middle immediately. It's really, really hard to deal with, and it was a huge problem that day. So it's a very small sample size of if we're going to talk about playoff performances overall, the week before against the Browns, which was one of the best defenses in the league last year, he looked pretty damn good.
Yeah.
So it's not like he's unproven in the playoffs. It's just a matter of he's got to have some more experience under his belt before he gets, you know, some of the grudging support from others.
Yeah. I would say he's probably got to go on the road and do it. But Mahomes didn't even Mahomes didn't even go on the road for a playoff game until last season. He played every playoff game was at home.
It's a big test. I didn't know if he was any good until then. Like, all right, you might be all right, kid.
Yeah.
You might be all right.
Okay, text message.
Well, unless you include the Super Bowl victories as being on the road.
Yeah, I suppose. text message. The Bob McGinn article later stated that Favre sent a series of pictures of little Brett to Seth Payne, who would sheepishly look at them from time to time. The time-to-time part's my favorite. Like, you kept them on your phone just in case you had an inkling to look at them.
It's just...
little Brett.
I just want to be reminded of how close I was from your inches away.
What
you might
a
say.
Weird yeah. excerpt of an article that was that you just read.
It was so strange. I was looking for it because I was doing this little video on CJ Stroud that I'm doing, and I was just thinking about what a nightmare it is going against quarterbacks who are really good with that the pocket movement. Because it does. It feels like you're so much closer to a sack than you actually are. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to see if there was maybe a clip of it or something. That was the only thing I came up with was the inaccurate report. I'm going to call Tyler Dunn, who runs the website that article is on, and I gotta talk to Bob McGinn about
this. Yeah, you gotta get McGinn's
set the record straight.
You gotta get.
I initiated it. I was not mortified. I was more just. I called Brett a SOB in a fun way, you know, just because I said, can I at least get a hurry out of that?
Yeah.
If it's a complete pass, you don't even get a hurry out of it.
That's
like,
funny.
How the hell did you complete that pass under pressure? It was unbelievable. Oh, unbelievable.
Funny. That is funny.
Softly touched his hand.
Yeah, I didn't know you had such a far fetish, bro. That's man. All right, Payne and Pendergast.
Someday, what these hands might text someday.
Yeah,
Could you grace my timeline with a text from you, Brett Favre?
Someday, these hands will touch a lot of illegal funds in the state of Mississippi. Oh, I should be careful. Favre is getting litigious about that. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a. On a Tuesday.
Good job, Sean.
Thank you. Yeah.
Where's my bell? Oh, dang it.
Hang on.
Oh, wait, no. Here, I've got my spare. Okay, you got it.
I got a bell. Thank you, Seth. All right, up next.
I travel with my bell now. Did you know that?
I do, yeah.
So the positive reinforcement doesn't end on the road.
Hell yeah. Let's check in on Deion Sanders. Deion Sanders has issued a no-question edict to one media member in Denver. And he got very Deion-like again earlier this week in their week one press conference. We'll hear from old Prime, Coach Prime, coming up next.
Live from the Twin Peaks studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Coach Prime, and I got to check in on this stuff, man. This is supremely entertaining. Deion Sanders has put a no-question edict on Sean Keeler, who is the... He's basically, I don't know if he's the beat writer for Colorado, but he's there at all the press conferences. He writes for the Denver Post. I think he's a columnist there, like, you know, kind of like Lopez used to be. He writes about all things Denver sports.
He's a columnist.
Yeah. So, and in Colorado right now, there over the last year, there's been no bigger story than Deion Sanders. I would imagine Sean Payton and Deion Sanders, probably the two biggest stories in Colorado, and the Nuggets winning the championship. But Deion's a huge story. Sean Keeler no longer allowed to ask questions. The school told him because they thought he was disrespectful with some of the things that he had said about the Buffs and some of the names that he had called Coach Prime.
He's got some good names.
Yeah, he's got
He's got, let's see, the Bruce Lee of BS, the false prophet, Deposition Dion, Planet Prime. He talks about the Dion Kool-Aid and the circus that Colorado football has become.
And I will say, like, columnists are a tricky bunch. They are the columnists were the original internet agitators before there was an internet.
They're like the snarky.
They were the previous generation's version of the snarky dude on Twitter or what have you. So it can get contentious between columnists and coaches. So, but this is not anything new, and it's something that every football coach deals with in pretty much every market and college, and well, especially in the pros, but college as well.
Dion comes from the pros; they played there. You know what I mean? Like, he should know. We'll play Dion here. But I think, to your point, that's why there's so many columnists on shows like First Take and the debate shows.
Right.
You know, that's why Skip Bayless has made such a, and Stephen A. Smith too, such a seamless transition from being columnists back in the pre-debate TV days to being very wealthy TV debaters. So Dion was asked by Mark Kisla, and if you know anything about the Denver media, if there's a next person up to get blocked by Dion at press conferences, it might be Mark Kisla. He's one of those guys that you talk about. He's been a columnist for a number of years. He's on TV now in Denver, and he essentially brought up why, you know, he's asking Dion, why is he, you know, why is he so negative about some of the press stuff?
I hope that I'm covering you from now through the college football playoff.
I hope so, too.
Yeah.
I pray so.
Yeah. But I'm also known as a person that sometimes asks less than supportive questions or critical questions.
So if I
ask a negative question, you not answer them anymore?
That's being negative right now. Like, you take an approach that I'm going to be negative. I'm not negative to anybody in here. I will challenge you and ask you why or where is this coming from. So I'm not built like that. I'm not built to hate. I'm not a hateful guy. I come with love. I think if anybody in here has had encounters with me, I don't come with the bull junk. I come with the peace and the joy. Now, when you show me where you stand, I might have to change that a little bit. So I'm not going to match your ignorance or whatever. Not saying that you're ignorant, but a person, I'm not going to match that. Well, that's your prerogative. I don't have to come where you are, because my life is complete.
Okay, so I don't have to match ignorance.
If I take that at face value, that sounds like a good feeling on it. Like, that's a good sentiment. Like, I don't think a coach should just be a meek little lamb in the face of criticism or what have you.
Yeah.
If all I had ever known from a Deion Sanders press conference was that quote right there, or I mean, from anything at all, then maybe I'd believe it. The problem is that, like, Deion at times has castigated writers just for simply not being Colorado Buffalo fans.
Yes.
You know, like, he's looked super sensitive at times where he's criticizing writers who are supposed to be somewhat objective, at least, for not, like, totally fanboying over the Colorado Buffaloes.
Yeah, he would lead off press conferences after those wins he had at the beginning of last season, like, not just
you don't believe.
Yeah,
you don't believe.
Just,
like,
told
nope,
you, so.
You don't believe. Like, it's not their job to believe.
That's right.
Like,
that's right. Here's one more from Dion. This is a follow-up from Kisla. Do you feel persecuted?
Do you feel persecuted by outside noise?
I don't know about persecuted. This is a way of life for me. You guys act like this is the first time I've been shot at. I've been lied on, cheated, talked about, mistreated. That's a gospel song, ain't it? This is not the first time for this. But as I mature, instead of shooting back or lashing out or just dismissing you, I want to know why. Like, let's help each other. Let's figure out the why. Because if you understand the why in people, that helps you tremendously.
I think Dion just has a hard time processing coverage for a football team that went 4-8.
Sometimes you see this with younger athletes that don't really get or understand that the job of the writer is not to be a fan of the team.
Yeah.
You know, Pat Beverly was like this sometimes. He'd criticize people for just, like, basically not even, just for writing things that were objective and not even insulting or anything or asking questions about it and being like, well, are you a Rockets fan? Like, no, the guy's not. Like, ideally, they shouldn't be. If anything, I think part of it is that there are a lot more writers now that, like, they're almost like fanboys and they, like, want to cozy up to guys and everything. Like, I'm not comfortable with it, but it's, With Deion, I think the problem is Deion, in a lot of ways, he comes off like the woman who wears a low cut blouse with a huge, massive push up and then wants to get offended that she caught you looking at her boobs.
Yeah.
You know, like it's he wants all the attention, but only the right kind of attention. Don't talk. I want you to talk about me, but only the things that I want you to talk about.
Right,
there's a little bit of a Southern Belle element to it, you know?
Is there supposedly part of Deion's agreement is he can pick and choose who, like this whole Sean Keeler thing is like that. That's, I read an article that said like that's part of his agreement with Colorado is he gets to, he can have say so over who he does and doesn't talk to and answer questions.
Yeah, so he's not, so he's just flat out not talking or accepting questions from
that guy.
I haven't heard in any of the press conferences I've seen, I haven't heard any questions that are unfair. I think that they, it's not like people are getting up there and saying, asking him impossible the questions to answer or anything. He just seems to look. Deion's got a history. Remember, he doused Tim McCarver with water I think McCarver had criticized him for basically flying from a football game to the Braves playoff game.
I don't remember the exact.
And they won
reasons.
The series or something like that, and he doused Tim McCarver with water, not in a fun, playful way, like in the Astros celebrations where they're dousing the reporters with champagne.
Yeah, he had an issue with McCarver. Yeah. So Deion's, it goes back a ways with Deion.
Which, what it reminds me of a little bit is Tom Herman. I mean, Tom Herman, we had Garrett Heinrich was our old web director, just put out an article that said that was, it was where will Tom Herman's next stop be? And for whatever it's worth, Garrett's answer was Texas in the article. And that was it. He refused to have any more dealings with our station because Garrett had put out an article that asked where Tom Herman would end up next.
Well,
an article in which he had predicted that he would go to Texas. But that he would no longer talk to Sports Radio 610 because of this unfair treatment that I'm getting.
Right. Well, and the funny thing about that was he used to come on weekly with me and Rich and Ted during the season where, during his first season, where it was, let's face it, at that point, there was probably more to gain from Tom Herman than us having Tom Herman on. And then he bails. Like, once they're a big story now, it's like, okay, see you later. We don't need to re-adjudicate that. But it's a great example. It's a great comparison.
It was right after his run-in with Nick Wright, he kind of got, like, basically, he pulled a Deion. No, he's like, I'm not even going to talk to the whole outlet. Meanwhile, like, Meltzer and I were saying nice things about Tom Herman. I was really impressed with him and everything.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, I'm getting attacked on the daily on social media from people from Cougs who are like telling me what a scumbag I am. And I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? I'd be like, please give me one quote.
Yeah.
What is your issue? You work for 610. I'm like, all right. Great.
Yeah. Times are better now. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Let's circle back to the Texans. All right, no new news out of the Texans, so this is still an appropriate thing to bring up here. What are the biggest questions as of right now? The biggest question still remaining for the Texans, 6 hours out from having to put a 53-man roster out. I've got four or five of them right here. Big questions that we don't yet know the answers to. Let's try to answer them as best we can. We'll do that coming up next.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
If you want the real story behind the NFL, you need the Stinkin' Truth Podcast. Three-time Super Bowl champ Mark Schlereth breaks down the biggest plays, the biggest games, and the untold stories that make this game what it is. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.